Welcome on to a special edition of the Dunktown Basketball Podcast. One of my favorite guests ever, finally back on the show. I don't feel like I can impose upon him more than once per season, but it's always awesome. Maybe the preeminent Wolves expert out there. Their color man, also assistant for the WNBA's Minnesota Lynx, Jim Peterson. How you doing, Jim?
Great, Nate. Thanks for having me on again. You could ask me to be on more than once a year. I can do twice a year, Nate. I enjoy your podcast. You know, it's amazing to me, and you can probably speak to this too because you're actually doing a podcast and track the number of hits that you get. But the podcast has become a thing that is it's gargantuan now. I mean, you know, appointment, nobody has time to sit there and you know, appointment, listen or watch things anymore. And having it be on your phone anytime you have a moment, it's become incredible how much information we can gather. And you do a great job. I mean, not only on Twitter, but your podcast. So it's this genre has really exploded.
It's really cool. Thank you for saying that. But I don't like mind doing the dishes anymore now because I can just put a podcast on, you know. It's like I actually volunteer because I needed some time where I can catch up on all my listening. And it's so much better. Like radio, it's like 20 minutes of commercial an hour on radio, you know. And I think the content's more specific. People have greater expertise. They spend more time getting into it. So, yeah, I love podcasts. And hey, if you want to advertise on a podcast, you know, my email address is in my Twitter bio.
Well, when I start my public speaking business, I'll be sure to do that because that would probably help me out quite a bit. So, yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah, well, you probably wouldn't have a more loyal audience than people who listen to the show, listen to League Pass, obviously love the broadcast. Let's start talking some Wolves here, though.
Okay.
How are you feeling about this season so far? I think a lot of people had some very high expectations. I was kind of in the middle for them. And when you saw some of the prognostications that had Minnesota in the playoffs, even like well over 500, did you think that that was something that was possible and could happen? Or did you, knowing the team as you do, think it might take a little more time as it in fact has?
Well, I you're talking about a guy who's you know, unreasonably optimistic for my team year in, year out. You know what I mean? Like I want us to be good. I want, you know, and I'm always kind of going between Lynx and Wolves. And so we win championships on the Lynx side. And then I go back to the Wolves side and my Lynx optimism sometimes bleeds into my Wolves, you know, hopefulness, you know. But you know, when you win 16 games in 14 and 15, and then you win 29 games last year with all the turmoil that this organization went through, with, you know, Flip passing and Sam taking over and, you know, the transition of, you know, KG not knowing what his situation was and kind of the weird sort of Frankenstein lineup roster that we had last year with these veteran guys who were, you know, like Tayshaun Prince and Andre Miller and KG, guys who were way past their prime and ready to retire, with these super young, incredibly talented guys. There was no like middle ground for us, you know? And so it was difficult to kind of, you know, see where the vision was. Now, the problem is that, you know, Flip was actually really great at player evaluation. I think I mentioned this to you before. With, you know, when Mikhail was the president of basketball operations and Flip was the coach, I agreed with Flip a lot on player decisions, player personnel kind of stuff. So he was really great at that. Losing that kind of, you know, brain power in that position was difficult. You know, Minnesota did get lucky, got the first pick of the draft and got Towns, made the trade for Wiggins for Kevin Love. You get Zach LaVine, who has become, you know, starting to, you know, kind of get into the player that he was. And those three guys give you a lot of confidence that, you know, that you can win some games. You know, Gorgie has gotten better. Shabazz is, you know, he goes in and out of progress. He shoots the three better. But so coming into the season, you know, when you bring in a Tom Thibodeau, whose track record for turning around teams and obviously, you know, his reputation as an assistant coach and a grinder and what he did for Doc in Boston and for Van Gundy in Houston and New York and his reputation, you know, in Chicago, the way he was able to turn, you know, already a good playoff team. When he took over Chicago, they already had all those veteran guys on that team that kind of knew how to win a little bit. bit. And they did make a big
jump. That's one thing that people forget, I think, about that Chicago team is they were already 10th in defense when he took over. You know, and so he improved them, obviously, to number one. But expecting that sort of improvement right away, I mean, that was a completely different Chicago team. You know, there weren't any Joakim Noahs, Taj Gibsons. Omer Asik was a guy who was a veteran in Europe on that team. They had Ronnie Brewer, who was really good defensively on the wing. Luol Deng. Like, there's not that kind of established defensive player or culture. And a lot of those guys even had played under Scott Skiles, who, you know, was of the same ilk.
Right. And so a couple things. You know, we've had 8 coaches in the last 10 years. I mean, think about that. So Dwayne Casey, 10 years ago, Dwayne Casey was the coach here in Minnesota. And then, you know,
he got a raw deal, by the way, Dwayne Casey.
He was 20 and 20 when he was 20 and 20 when he was fired. And then the Wolves went into the desert because I'm not sure how long it took them to get back to 500 at any point in the season. But it was a while because then Whitman took over and then Whitman was, you know, fired. McHale took over and then Rambis came in for those two, like, I mean, gut-wrenching season, 15 and 67 and another 17-win season after that. I mean, like, that was terrible. Then you get Adelman, but you're not really sure how much gas Adelman has left in the tank. Even though he's a tremendous coach, Nate, you know, he was great. I mean, like, sitting there and watching him put the corner offense in, which I'm a huge fan of the corner offense. A lot of teams run it.
I mean, that was so good for Kevin Love. I mean, I still, every once in a while, I would go back. There's like this a guy named Half Court Hoops does some great YouTube videos, and he has this video of like that's 4 minutes long of all the sets they ran to get Kevin Love threes, and they're just fantastic.
Brilliant, brilliant stuff, and all the wrinkles that they ran out of it. And, you know, David Adelman stayed around after Rick left, and just talking with David, who's now down in Orlando, just genius kind of stuff, you know, and, you know, obviously it really worked well in Sacramento, but it worked everywhere where Rick brought it. I mean, you know, Brad Miller was tremendous. And so, you know, so Rick was great. Hey, we got to 40 and 42 under Rick Adelman in his last year. So, you know, Flip takes over. Obviously, we're kind of, you know, trying to position ourselves for the draft. So, you know, you go into the lottery and you end up getting Towns. You know, Sam takes over 29 wins last year. So I guess I say that to say, I was optimistic, you know, with Tibbs and this young group of guys. And Sam did a great job last year, I think, developing these young guys. Like, you know, I don't think Sam got enough credit. I think that there were a lot of Wolves fans who were kind of like saying, you know, because of the style of play, the lack of 3-point shooting was the main thing that people were kind of harping on Sam with. And we just didn't have enough 3-point shooters. And
you still don't.
But the gap has been lessened. You know what I mean? Like,
and Andrew and Zach are shooting it better,
4-3 a game.
Yeah.
Zach is shooting it better. Wiggins is shooting it better. Even like Shabazz last 10 games has been doing a better job. So I didn't think, you know, like, you know, over 500 kind of, you know, season for Minnesota. I thought 41 wins would be a really good improvement and foreseeable, you know, 29 wins last year to get to 41 with this young group and with Tibbs kind of like locking down the defense. I thought that Minnesota would have a top 15 defense this year. That's being sort of, you know, middle of the pack sort of, you know, idea. You know, Tibbs, he could have, you know, theoretically, you know, the concepts, the way he drills them every day. You know, Ed Pinckney and I were teammates in Sacramento, so I've known Ed for a long time. And Ed's whole run at Chicago, you know, he was always calling and texting me, especially during our Minnesota Lynx runs. Ed's a basketball junkie. Ed would watch, you know, 8-year-old girls basketball in an elementary school gym.
If you're just like a normal sized person, don't shake hands with Ed Pinckney if you want your hand back. That guy's got some mitts.
Oh, Ed's a gentle giant, man.
But I mean, he'll get you with that handshake. But yeah, no, I love Ed. He's great.
He's great. And so, like, Ed would share with me. We would talk, you know, the kind of stuff that Tibbs does, and you know, we would talk about drill work and the kind of things that he hones in on. And then, you know, during this past summer, during our Lynx season, I'm in the gym all the time at practice and, you know, in the office and stuff. And during you know, when they're bringing free agents and when they started those informal workouts 3 weeks before training camp, and I'm seeing the concepts that Tibbs, and I'm seeing firsthand how he puts stuff in, how he drills it, and the brilliant simplicity of some of the defensive drill work that he does. That, because, you know, as a coach, you're always sitting there going, well, how can we drill this concept to make it, you know, not boring, to get everybody involved, to make it fast, and to hit on the teaching points that we want to get through, you know.
I think that's actually, let me, to break in. This is a little bit of an aside, but I think that that is really the next frontier in coaching, is really learning, whether it's tailoring it for individual players, whether it's utilizing the best in education research, whether it's doing your own experimentation. What is the way that we can most efficiently get each individual player to retain information, and doing that in a scientific way that actually utilizes education research? I think that's something that it could be the next frontier for a lot of coaches. Is that something that you know that anyone has ever really looked into in the NBA or in like a scientific way? Obviously, people really try to do it, but as far as like, hey, I'm going to like research this kind of in other fields, because I mean, that's obviously something in education, people look at that all the time.
Yeah, I would think that there are teams that are on the forefront of that. I would assume that, you know, teams like the Spurs, and Spurs always get credit for kind of everything being on the cutting edge, but I would imagine that they really pay attention to how certain players learn and what they do. I had an interesting conversation. Sean Sweeney is a friend of mine. He's from Minnesota. He's on Jason Kidd's staff with the Bucks, and Sean is a rising star among the coaching ranks. He's a pretty fiery guy. Started out as a video coordinator with Jason, actually before Jason, in Brooklyn. And we were talking about his workouts with Giannis this past summer. He spent a bunch of time with Giannis in L.A. tailoring his workouts. And so, you know, there's the kind of workouts that you put guys through that sort of by rote. You just kind of, you know, you're going through dribbling drills, and you're going through escape dribble jump shots, and you're going more like, you know, off of a cone than you are actually playing the game.
Yeah, you know what? That just kills me. And a lot of teams, it's very telling to me. You know, I love to just get to the arena early and watch the guys, especially the guys in the end of bench, work out. And, you know, half the times I find that guys are doing moves, you know, especially it's like the big guys on their post moves too, where it's like, you know, they'll practice a jump hook and they just turn around and bring the ball right in front of like where the defender would be. And it's just, and it's like, all right, I understand you can't go game speed all the time on these. You don't necessarily have the resources to do that. You're on the road, you're tired, but like doing reps that just where you can watch it, just some schmo like me sitting on the sideline and be like, that is a move that would never, ever work in a game. You know, I like, you shouldn't be doing that to me. That's my opinion, at least.
And so that was the point. Like what Sean was, you know, I was very interested in what he had to say about this, because, we're always looking for ways to develop players and all the different ways that you do it. So there are guys that, you know, can just, you know, get, you know, 100 reps of, you know, escape dribble right, escape dribble left, escape dribble drop step, escape dribble step back, escape dribble, you know, crossover into another, you know, another move. So you can do that, and you can get better at it. The main thing is going game speed. You know, if you're not going game speed, you're not doing yourself any good. Game shots, game spots at game speed, right? So
it's got to be hard for some of the old guys, though, because especially guys who are playing, like, it's got to be tough to like get enough reps in, because it's just, even that takes a toll on your body, you know?
Yeah, but I think that you can go hard and do fewer reps. I think there's a real benefit to that. The other thing with the way things are kind of shaking up from a personnel standpoint, like I've had this conversation with a few video coordinators across the NBA, guys who are really good video coordinators but aren't necessarily athletes. One of the things that is kind of a trend now, and you might have heard this, that a lot of teams are trying to get former players, former either college players or pro players or whatever, into the video room. Yeah. And the Spurs are notorious for this, because they want 6'6", 6'7" guys who are not necessarily on the coaching staff but are in the video room, that are athletes that can get on the floor. And what you're saying is when that, you know, post player is trying to, you know, work on his jump hook, that there's actually someone going against him that's not another player, that's not a 40-year-old coach, that is young and athletic. So the video room now is being sort of, instead of like the sort of, you know, manager type of video coordinator, you know, like the Vogels and the guys that, you know, the Spolstras, the guys that kind of came up through the ranks as video coordinators, they're trying to get more players in those roles so that they can give Andrew Wiggins a good look, so they can give Carl Anthony Towns a good look in a workout. You know what I mean? So instead of having cones out there, to have a body. So when you're working on pick and roll game, you're working on actual fundamentals of the game that you're getting better at, because you're getting reps against defense that's not just a cone. So anyway, we kind of digressed here.
Before we get back to the Wolves here, let's do a brief word here, and then we'll be right back with Jim Peterson, getting more into this Wolves season. One of the institutions that I really dislike the most in our society are cab companies. There's never one there when you need one. If you call for one, it takes them forever to arrive. Sometimes you don't even know if they're going to show up. I've had times where I've called for cabs and they've just never showed up at all. And then you want to call again and they say it's coming and it's not coming. The guys, for whatever reason, can't really seem to drive a lot of the time. They're really want to accelerate up to 45 miles an hour and then decelerate to 25 miles an hour to maintain 35 mile an hour speed. They accelerate as fast as they can to lights and then slam on the brakes. Lyft is changing all that. You use the free Lyft app, open it up. It knows your location. It knows where its drivers are. It will match you up with a driver nearly instantaneously. And these are people driving their own cars, so they actually like drive the way a normal person would instead of the way a cab driver would. 9 out of 10 Lyft rides get a perfect 5-star rating from the passenger. I think it's just a better all-around experience than a cab, and I happen to prefer it over other ride-sharing apps as well. I've actually been using them since 2013, long before they were actually a sponsor of this podcast. You don't have to bump a ride. You don't have to worry about parking. You don't have to worry about drunk driving. Lyft is just a great solution to your transportation problems. The way you can get started with them, 3 free rides up to $10 each, a $30 value when you enter the promo code CAPSPACE. So you download that free Lyft app today, enter the promo code CAPSPACE in the payment section, and you can start with 3 free rides up to $10 each. Promo code CAPSPACE on the free Lyft app. Easy to remember, we talk about CAPSPACE all the time on the program. So enter that promo code CAPSPACE today on the free Lyft app to get started.
All right, so I wanted to talk first about really, there's been a lot of negative attention on this Wolves team. You see them up close every day. Let's start with some good stuff. Like, what have you seen that's been a silver lining of the season? Like, have you seen some of these teams or the team overall and some of the individuals get better, even if it hasn't shown as much in the record?
Well, one of the silver linings is that, you know, we're sitting here 12 and 26, and the Wolves are only 3.5 games out of the 8th spot in the playoffs. I mean, that's a silver lining. Truly. The fact that the Wolves have built as many double-digit leads in games that they've been able to build. Building a 10-point lead is not easy in an NBA game. They've done it half the time. They, you know, 19 out of the 38 games that the Wolves have played, they've built double-digit leads in them.
Yeah, I think they still have a very positive net rating in the first half, even.
The net rating has been positive. And kind of just this last stretch of games, Nate, has been, it could have been a time, and I'm thinking about the Chicago game we won in Chicago. It was an ESPN game. It was on December 13th. Wolves were down 21 and came back and won at United Center. And so Wolves have played 14 games since December 13th, okay? They've gone 6-8 in that span. And I'm not even kidding you. If you looked at our game log and you looked at the scores of the games that we played in that stretch, we could easily, and I'm not even, this is not even like a homer kind of thing. I'm saying easily be 13-1. The one loss, the Christmas Day game against OKC was the only one that you could say we were really kind of never in that game, or that game was not a game we could have won. But we lose to, you know, the game after Chicago, we lose to Houston in overtime, which we had no business losing that game. We had a 17-point lead in that game in the third quarter.
Yeah, I mean, that was wasn't it like 13 with like 4 or 5 minutes to go or something like that?
Yeah, that game was in control. There's no question that we played great in that game for us, and there's no reason for us. We just couldn't score at the end. It was a big problem. You know, we lose by 4 to Sacramento. We lose by 2 to Denver. You know, at Denver, that we should have won that game was easily a winnable game. Andrew Wiggins, you know, had that dunk at the rim that Wilson Chandler blocked away. That, you know, was a winnable game for us. We just didn't execute down the stretch. Lose by 6 to the Trailblazers just on January 1st.
That was no
Damian Lillard and McCollum just went off. I mean, we had 43 in the game, and we couldn't, you know, it was just, but still, that was a game that was winnable. We lose by 2 at Philly. We lose by 7 at Washington. That was a game that we had in control as well. The score isn't indicative of how close that game actually was. Utah went on an 11-0 run at the end of the fourth quarter to beat us by 2 here just the other night on January 7th. And then we beat the Dallas Mavericks. So, you know, I say, say that, but, you know, the tenth at Chicago game, we're seventh in defensive rating in the league. So there's, you talk about silver linings. I mean, the fact that we've dumped, we're 0-8 in 3-point games. We're 9-13 in games that we built 10-point leads.
Yeah. I mean, looking at the last 14 games right now, yeah, 0.9 net rating over that time, 105 defensive rating, which is seventh, but the offense has just been absolutely crazy over these last, like, this last month or so. So that's actually not that bad relative to the rest of the league. Getting 53% of rebounds. That's pretty impressive. Offensive rebound percentage, 29%. You know, there some good things have been happening of late, and
yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I hadn't really quite seen that. I know they'd blown some games, but no, it's actually it's looking not bad. And maybe, you know, I still think the playoffs are probably going to be out of reach because there's just so many teams there. But it's still something to build on here. And then maybe they have all the cap space this summer, build in a few more role players around these guys, and it can look better.
Well, and that's been the real problem is, you know, a couple things. You know, sometimes your personnel just doesn't fit together. And when you see those numbers, when you see the fact that Minnesota's 0-8 in games decided by 3 points, and they're 0-7 in a division that, you know, has Portland and Denver in it, and we're 0-2 against the Kings. You know what I mean? Games that these games against the Kings, we should have won both those games against the Kings. And those third quarters were a bugaboo early, and it still kind of it happens sometimes. But just because these 21-year-olds, it's hard to make them focus for 48 minutes as a group.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And so if you had just a modicum of veteran leadership that actually was on the court making decisions, helping these guys out, it would be it'd be much more profitable. So, I mean, given the fact we just the litany of things we just talked about in terms of the last 14 games of what could have happened, and the fact that Minnesota's only 3.5 games out of the eighth spot, I mean, not even, you know, squinting your eyes, you can see that we could easily be in that eighth spot. I mean, if games just would have been closed out properly and the personnel would have fit together in such a way that they actually were able to do that. So I think it's the veteran leadership part of it. It's having 21-year-olds be decision makers. It's being able to possession after possession, especially in the fourth quarter when the game is different in the fourth quarter than it is through the first three. Like you've got to value possessions more, and you've got to execute out of timeouts. You got to focus in way more. And then defensively, you just got to make plays. And so I just don't think 21-year-olds have the ability to really, really understand how valuable a possession is in a 48-minute game.
Well, and I think you can make the argument that of all these teams that are kind of schlepping through trying to get into this eighth seed mix, that the Wolves have looked the best. If you're going to say, hey, which of these teams has looked the best at times this year, you would probably have to say the Wolves. They've had some really nice blowout wins that very few of these teams have had. And, you know, I think the defensive improvement has been encouraging. They're up to, I think, 24th now overall in the season, 11th in offense. You probably have to be pretty happy with that, especially when you consider that this is a team that's not really, they're not playing a sort of the traditional spacing style that a lot of these teams are playing where you're spreading the floor. So I think to be as high in offense as they are, it is impressive when you consider that, you know, they don't have a ton of shooting outside of those three guys. So I do think it's possible that they could start playing a lot better. What have been your observations of Tom Thibodeau? You've been around him now for these first 3 months or so of the season, including training camp. How would you compare his style to Sam Mitchell? And, you know, if you can just take us through what some of the key things that he's trying to do on both offense and defense, what his philosophies are.
Well, I'll tell you what the similarities between Sam and Tibbs are, and that's that they're both, you know, sort of old school in their approach to the game in terms of the fundamentals of the game. And you know, not that you know, all coaches obviously teach fundamentals, but the breaking things down and teaching the fundamentals. I mean, going back to, you know, square one, and that's a lot what Sam did last year with their pick and roll defense. Like he was going back to square one, hoping that guys would get it. And Sam's pretty fiery on the court as a teacher. And I say that like, you know, not in a PG way, you know what I mean? Like he's very animated. And Tibbs is more controlled though, you know, like, but like the Tibbs, they do the same things every single day. Like Tibbs is like, you know, we're doing this every day, like their defensive concepts and stuff they drill. It's very, it's genius in its simplicity, if you know what I mean. And then,
sure.
And then, so like, you know, so they're very fundamentally driven. And that's kind of like where the similarities sort of end, because they're different. They're just completely different people. You know, Sam is more fun loving and has a lot of interest outside of basketball and away from the gym and the office. And so he believes in coming in and doing your work. But then when you're done, you leave it there, where Tibbs is more likely to, you know, as he's been, you know, known to do, burn the midnight oil. I mean, he expects guys to work and he's working. He's not, he's basketball 24/7, 365. You know, he never really takes a break. I mean, so you know, he's not married and he doesn't have a family. So I mean, sometimes I think for Tibbs, like his work outside of work balance, the balance is not always, to me, seemingly healthy, but it works for Tibbs. You know what I mean? Like, we can't sit here and judge the guy. This is what he wants to do, and he loves it, and I respect that. You know what I mean? So like they're very different that way. You know, Sam is much more in terms of like patting guys on the back and slapping them high fives and joking with them and all that kind of. He's a player. You know, he's a former player, so he kind of gets it from the player perspective. You know, he's a very different personality from Tibbs in that regard. A lot of people only see, this is what I think fans that either go to Target Center or watch on TV, I think they see Tibbs, and one of the things that our fans are commenting a lot on is his constant, you know, yelling and screaming coverages and concept and whether it's officials
like it.
Or players.
I like it for my because I actually, if I put headphones on, I can actually discern what he's saying. It's actually quite educational for me. But
and if you're he's a scout's dream, you know, he's an advanced scout's dream, because you're sitting at courtside, he's calling out all Minnesota's play sets. There's no equivocation on what the play call is, because you're getting the play call. And so that's, I always kind of joke about that, because like, this guy, like, sometimes you're at games and you're trying to scout a team and you're trying to get play calls, and you know, so many coaches, they try to stealthily use hand signals, or they mouth something like from the bench to somebody that's on the floor, and it's relayed in a very stealth way, and you don't get any play calls. With Tibbs, there's no question, you're getting the play call. You know what the play call is.
Well, so you mentioned all the defensive drills. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and like, Tibbs never sits down. Tibbs is always up. He's up the entire time. He never sits down and sort of relaxes for a minute. You know what I mean? Like, he's just always grinding. And so like, the way he coaches in a game is sort of indicative of his personality. But what people don't see with Tibbs is they don't see him be calm, cool, and collected in practice, and the way that he teaches. He's got a very, obviously he's got a resonant voice, right? So when he's on the court teaching, his voice resonates. And like, he doesn't have to sit there and go crazy in practice. I mean, he does when he needs to, but for the most part, Tibbs is sort of even keel. And then he's doing what people also don't see is the video sessions that he has when he's building relationships with Tibbs, with Towns, Levine, Wiggins, the other players, Ricky, whoever. He does one-on-one sessions with these guys where he's building relationships, mate. You know what I mean? It's like people.
Yeah. And a lot of coaches don't do that, right? It's usually the assistants.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
They don't do that. And so, like, so if you're only basing Tibbs, like, these guys must, like, hate playing for this guy or whatever, they don't see all the other times where Tibbs is joking with them, and when he's great, like, at practice, and when he's great in an individual video session, and the way he talks to these guys every other moment. If you're only judging them based on what you see during the game, you're not getting the full picture.
Well, so from a philosophy standpoint, I mean, just like two, three things, and some people may know this already, but just in terms of like his defense, like, what are like the core principles that he is really trying to teach these guys?
Well, I think that, you know, I think that playing the percentages is a very important thing. Like, technique is very important. You know, how you position your body based on the scouting report of a particular player, because obviously, you know, not every player is created equal, and that their strengths aren't always the same. And sometimes you want to close out long to a Ryan Anderson, but you know, if somebody who's not a 3-point shooter, maybe you don't close out quite as long. If somebody likes to attack a closeout because they want to drive more than they want to shoot, you know, it's all about how you approach the scouting report. And so technique is very important. Body positioning, not gambling, closing out quickly and being able to get a hand up and be able to contest a shot. You know, it's obviously been proven that proximity to the defense, to the field goal percentage of a shooter, if you are in closer proximity and you get a hand up to contest a shot, that shot, the field goal percentage plummets when you're in. But if you don't make the effort to get out there and close out appropriately so that you don't get your closeout attacked with. Now you're giving up dribble penetration, and now it's breaking down your defense. You know, technique matters. You know, being on a string, and so Tibbs is really big on communication. He's really big on staying connected. And so, you know, what does that mean, like staying connected? Like to get 21-year-olds to talk is very difficult. It's more difficult than you think it is. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think that any parent that's kind of ridden around with their, you know, 18-year-olds and in a car with a group of them, sometimes they, you know, they'll be texting each other and not even conversing with each other. You know what I mean? Like, so
and you also like to always, if especially if you're like the big guys behind, like you have to be dead sure even about what you're doing before you can talk and be communicating with others. And if you don't have the confidence in what you're doing just because of your experience, you don't have the rep, you're not going to be confident to be yelling stuff out, you know, to communicate with everybody else either.
And being able to be on a string. So, you know, if there's a pick and roll and now, you know, somebody has to go and rotate to the roller and now got to help the helper and being on a string, you know, being on a string and not being a half step slow. That's the thing that I think Tibbs Knight is most frustrated by is being a half step slow. These athletes are so great that if you're not thinking ahead and being a half step early, if you're a half step slow, you're going to get beat on those 5 to 10 possessions that it takes to win a close game. You know what I mean? Because that's really all it comes down to. When you go back and you do a lot of analyzing, and you did a great thing the night we played Denver at Denver. You had all those possessions where you showed how Andrew Wiggins kind of stands straight up and down and doesn't react to the basketball. Like he doesn't track the basketball and see the flight of the ball like all the great rebounders do that. They can see it short or long or sort of anticipate which way it's going to go and then use your athleticism to go get the basketball. And Towns is a half step slow. I mean, you know what I'm saying because you've looked at our games and you've seen it. You've seen the half step slow. And so that's where Tibbs is. He's trying to extinguish a lot of that by just, you know, by playing the percentages, not stabbing for steals and getting out of position and now breaking down the defense. Just all those little things and being disciplined, being connected and doing things in a disciplined way.
I will talk a little bit more with Jim Peterson momentarily after this word.
I've never been one to really go for expensive designer jeans. I would rather buy a new laptop than a pair of jeans when they cost about the same price. But Distilled is changing all that. They've revolutionized the fashion industry with timeless luxury grade denim. You can get jeans that would normally cost you hundreds. They start at just $75. Distilled, spelled D-S-T-L-D. The way to get started with them, distilled.com, DSTLD.com/capspace. Been getting a lot of great comments from people on Twitter who have bought these, friends and family as well, who really liked Distilled. It's cheaper than even some of the mid-range jeans, and yet I think it is the best pair of jeans that I personally have ever owned. The way they're able to do that is they don't work with middlemen. They don't place their products in stores. It's all direct marketing, and they have forward-thinking advertising like podcasts to let people know about their product. They also have a new line of jackets as well, so you could go with a classic denim jacket or a stylish bomber jacket as well. Same level of quality and convenience that you've gotten with the jeans if you've bought their jeans as I have. So again, to get started with them, distilled.com, DSTLD.com/capspace for $10 off right now. 5 letters, DSTLD.com/capspace. You can get those $10 off and let them know that you came from us.
So offensively, then, we haven't really talked much about the offense. What is, do you think are some of the key principles for Tibbs' offensive philosophy, you know, if there is anything that really separates him from some of the other coaches that you've been around or some of the other NBA coaches?
Well, I mean, you know, I think offensively, like some of the play sets that I see these running, I wouldn't necessarily run them just because I think it the players that are on the floor don't run them particularly well. And one of the things that actually has been good for, you know, us is that, or for Minnesota, has been the fact that, you know, using Andrew Wiggins in isolation a lot or in high ball screen action. Now, it's become somewhat predictable. I think people kind of know what we're going to do end of game situation where Andrew's going to have the basketball. But the points per possession numbers, if you look at, like, how Minnesota's been executing, I don't exactly know 100%. I'm just kind of going off of some of the games that I've gone and broken down and looked at the effectiveness of certain play sets, because you think one thing when you're watching the game, you have to go back to the video and confirm what you're thinking. And so the Andrew Wiggins plays has been better. You know, especially if Karl Anthony Towns is involved in the pick and roll a lot of times. And so, like, you know, two-player combinations, three-player combinations, you know, you got to look at who's successful. The thing that's been somewhat difficult sometimes is that since you've taken the ball out of Rubio's hands a lot in those pick and end-of-game situations and pick and roll, sometimes the ball will find Ricky, and that's not always been great. You know what I mean? Like, in terms of Andrew's in the pick and roll, Andrew gets stopped, the roller, they take away the roller, and now the guy that's open is Rubio. The thing that that Tibbs has tried to go to is you're always trying to get double. You know, if you can get your players double teamed, like if you're getting two players committed to one, you want that scenario, right?
Sure.
So you want Andrew Wiggins to come off the ball screen and trap Andrew Wiggins, because now there's two players on one. Andrew can get the ball out, and now you have an advantage. Right.
Yeah.
And
do you think he's improved as a passer? Do you think Wiggins has improved as a passer? Because I actually saw him throw some pretty nice passes at times in that Philly game, even though he was shooting very poorly. I thought that he's making baby steps in that regard, I think, at least.
Yeah, no, he is. And you know, and so Andrew now, you know, sometimes in the Philly game, he wasn't great, but the next night against Washington, he was. He had, you know, like 41 in that game. And, you know, in those kind of situations where he's kind of in the zone and he's got there a lot, like, you know, because he and Cat both have 40-point games, by the way, and Zach has one. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's the first time in league history that three players have had 40 points in a game, you know, in a game under the age of 22. So, I mean, that's never happened before.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, how many teams have had three guys have a 40-point game at this point in the season, no matter what right. age they are? That's pretty rare.
So Cat and Wiggins have two each, and then Wiggins and Levine has one, and we've got three 20-point scorers. So only two other teams have that, Golden State and Cleveland. So that's another silver lining kind of thing, if you're asking me. But so, you know, with Wiggins, there was a couple games where he's been getting trapped rather hard. Like, they really went after him to get the ball out of his hands because he was so dynamic. And he had some mixed success, but for the most part, he has done a better job. The same thing with Towns in post-up situations. Because Carl's so skilled, you know, this is another thing that Tibbs has been trying to do. Either it's Andrew Wiggins and ball screens, putting the ball in his hands more. And then it's also been Towns post-ups, because Carl was kind of floating a little bit. I think we've talked about this before, where I felt Carl was kind of floating out a little bit too much. But Tibbs has really tried to get the ball into Cat in the left box post-ups, right? Because he's been good down there.
Yeah.
And against single coverage, Carl can pretty much score on anybody. I don't care who he's really playing. If you only play him one-on-one, he's gonna get a good shot. He's gonna score down
there. I'm really impressed with how strong he is at times. I mean, because, like, you know, this, it, being a post guy, to me, the big difference is whether a shot's going to go in or not in the post is when you make that turn, are you kind of knocking the guy backwards a little bit and you can go into your shot, or are you shooting it as you're kind of getting knocked backwards a little bit as you're coming across the lane for your jump hook or for your sweeping hook shot? And Carl, he more times than not, he's the guy who's actually like being able to create the space on those plays, which for a young guy you'd think he wouldn't be that strong, but he really seems to succeed on those plays, which is impressive to me.
Right. And so, to Tibbs's credit, he's gone to his strength. Instead of, you know, Carl kind of floating out of the perimeter, Carl's getting post-up opportunities. They run a lot of cross-screen action for him. They'll back screen for him. They run a lot of wedge action, which is basically just kind of a diagonal up screen for him that he rolls down into the post in. And so what teams have, because he's been so devastating down there, a lot of teams are just doubling Carl, and they're coming on the catch. You know, the ball might even be in the air and they're coming.
Yeah, because, you know, I think they want to make the other guys beat them. You know, there's not, whether it's Jang.
Yeah.
Jang is a wonderful mid-range shooter, but that's still, you know, a long two that you're giving up. And Ricky, his shooting struggles are kind of well chronicled.
Well, it kind of started with, like, I talked about the Houston game, which was right after the Chicago game back in the middle of December. Patrick Beverley was just leaving Ricky, They didn't even care about guarding Ricky. They just came, and Patrick Beverley is a tremendous, as you know, a great defensive player. When he double teams, he doesn't let Carl split. Like, that's a lot of teams that you can see that are sloppy in their double team technique. Carl can still split them and still get to the rim, something he did last night against Dallas. You know, as we're recording this, we just played Dallas the night before, and Carl was killing them, like, you know, killing Bogut, killing, and they tried guarding with Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes did a great job playing the four for Dallas, but he can't guard Cat.
Even Draymond Green couldn't stop him last year. You know, I mean, and Draymond Green is one of the best post defenders in the league. He's got a low center of gravity, and still, you know, Carl was able to really spin into the lane and get to the shot that he wanted against him.
Yeah, and so, you know, you talked about Andrew Wiggins and his passing, how he's gotten better, and he has, but he should average more assists per game, I think, Andrew does, with his ability. Yeah. Carl Anthony Towns, one of my New Year's resolutions for Towns this year was for him to lead all centers in assists per game. And you look at the job that Plumlee does in Portland. Mason Plumlee is he's a dealer out there, you know, because obviously they're trying to get the ball out of McCollum and Lillard's hands in pick and roll. And they do a great job of getting the ball to Plumlee in the middle of the floor. And I call it, pocket pass decision making. And so Draymond Green and Boris Diaw have been to, especially Boris Diaw, San Antonio Spurs Boris Diaw. You get that pocket pass decision making going with those guys. And Plumlee is leading all centers in assists. And there's no reason why Carl Anthony Towns can't do the same thing. He gets so much attention down there, and he's such a, I think he's become a willing passer, is my point. It's like he was not willing to pass and throw it out to teammates. He wanted to score. And so now I think he's seen the virtue of, he did it last night against Dallas a couple times where he got double teamed, threw it out, open player, Tyus Jones.
And he definitely has the ability. Last night. He's got the ability. Yeah. He has wonderful vision. He loves throwing those kind of flip over the shoulder passes to cutters and stuff. And I think he's been really good in that area. The biggest
it's
thing,
a mindset,
yeah.
Nate.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's a mindset. You know, it's a mindset to lead the just deciding. Just I'm gonna lead all centers. Not lead the league or be one of the league leaders. I'm just saying centers. Just be willing to make the kind of pass that is a scoring kind of pass, or just make the extra pass. And so Carl has shown a willingness to do that. That's one of the two biggest things for me is the Wiggins and Towns ability to pass when they need to.
So the thing that there's been a lot of scrutiny, obviously, on LaVine and Wiggins and Towns. And certainly I think they're young. Some of the issues that they have defensively, not being in a stance, you know, all that those are very valid issues. Those are things that obviously afflict a lot of young players. These guys as the faces of the franchise, a team that had expectations, there's more of a microscope on that. But to me, the issue is more with some of the role guys, because if you think about the two things that role guys need to do, number one is hit three-pointers, and number two is be really good on defense. And if you look at all the players who are not Carl Towns and are not Andrew Wiggins that are not Zach LaVine, is there anyone who's a great defender? You know, I think Rubio has kind of slipped a little bit this year in that regard. And then is there anybody who you're feeling like you can't leave at the three-point line? Like, I don't think they have guys who fall into either of those categories. And I think part of that was just they had a lot of cap space this summer, but this was a crazy market, and they made the right decision to sit that out. But that's what I think they really need on this team, is just the guys to play around them. It's more the fit around them than I think is even the issues with those three core guys.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Gorgui Dieng has been excellent. You talked about his mid-range shooting. I mean, he's done a really great job kind of playing off of Carl. But to me, Gorgui is a backup five. He's not a starting. I mean, it's debatable. I mean, who's the four and who's the five between Towns and Dieng?
Yeah.
You know, Gorgui, for the most part, guards five and Carl guards fours. But
yeah, and I've talked about that before. I think that Carl can be really a transformational defender at the five, and having him run out and guard combo forwards at the line. And then, you know, teams, it's not like these, it's like you can play two bigs and then you, all right, we're going to punish them Memphis style on the other end, because Gorgui is not going to post up when he's being guarded by a combo forward on the other end.
And a lot of times Gorgui's in the way, you know, like they'll run high ball screen with Towns and Wiggins or whatever, and Carl's trying to either roll or trying to space and then attack, because Carl likes to get the ball in the middle of the floor and drive it. And a lot of times Gorgui's ducking in, and so like Carl will drive a seam to get to the paint, to get to the rim, and Gorgui's standing there kind of ducking in. And so sometimes, and then, you know, Gorgui, we've seen, like, Gorgui's been great. Sometimes then they get him out of there, and now he's spaced into the corner. Gorgui's hit some big threes this year, you know, but he's not really a three-point shooter. I think you're not really, I mean,
he's more of a corner really guy
than an above the break guy. I mean, I think if you're really going to maximize it, you need an above the break guy. And he also, he takes an hour to get a shot off too, but I mean, it's very accurate.
He does have a very languid sort of shooting style. And then, but the killer has been like, Bielitsa has not been the assassin that we've needed him to be. Like, you know, that's supposed to be Belly's thing is to be above the break and to knock down 3-point shots from the slot or from the top.
You know, I mean, but he was always, how much have you seen him in Europe? Because to me, he was one of these guys who is more likes to handle the ball, be in pick and roll and like can hit a shot. But that was, I never thought of him as like just a knockdown kind of spot up shooter guy. I think he likes to have the ball in his hands, but he probably is not really dynamic enough to do that at the NBA level, especially when you have all these other guys.
He can handle the ball, but he sometimes you don't want him to, you know what I mean? Because like the defense at the NBA level is different than it is in Europe. He might have been able to get away with that in Europe.
He's switchable. If you're going to run a pick and roll with him, you can just switch it. He's not going to be able to beat an NBA big man consistently, I don't think.
Right. And so the other thing too, for me, there was a moment when Tibbs kind of played him at three, and so Belly at the three with Cat and Gorgie. Now if you're setting a screen, if Cat goes and sets a screen, when it's a 4-5 pick and roll, you can just switch, right?
Yeah.
But if Bielitsa is the three and he's got a small forward on him and Cat goes and sets a screen, you have to think about switching. Do you really want to switch a small forward onto Cat? You know what I mean? Like, and so that's why sometimes to me, I almost would rather see Belly play the three than the four.
Yeah, I think he's probably he's better on the perimeter than he is defending the rim and rebounding, although I think it clearly is imperfect in either of those roles.
Yeah, so, you know, but you talk about 3-point shooting with Shabazz over the last 10 games, and this might surprise you, but Shabazz is, you know, 13 of 23 from outside the arc the last 10 games. He's been really working on his 3-point shot. Peter Patton, who is the Wolves shooting coach, has done, I think, a really good job getting Shabazz into the gym and getting him confident. I mean, 56% shooting from outside the arc over the last 10 games for Shabazz is pretty good, and it's helped. You know what I mean? Like, he's hit some big threes for us over the last stretch of games.
Yeah,
so
he's getting better.
He's
not the greatest option, but I still think that their best lineup is with him at the four and then the rest of those guys. I think that still is, you know, granted, like, Shabazz makes a lot of mental mistakes defensively, and, you know, I'm not saying he's like a panacea, but I still think that is just a really, really difficult lineup to guard. And I would like to see a little bit more of that. And I still, maybe I'm overly influenced by how awesome that game was at Golden State that they won last year when they played that lineup. You know, that's probably the case. But I mean, we haven't seen much of that hardly at all, right?
I don't think we've seen that lineup at all. I don't think Shabazz is, I mean, if he's played the four, it's only been for a minute or two. I don't even recall seeing it. You're right, that game at Golden State when Shabazz did play the four, it was the right matchup for that, you know, playing against Draymond. It's a difficult thing. I was saying before how sometimes the pieces just don't fit. You know, it's like, I really think that, you know, Chris Dunn has been uneven offensively. He's been very good defensively. So, like, you talk about the bench identity, being able to, you know, come in and be defensively, be pretty good. Chris has been able to do that. He's gotten a little bit better, I think, with his decision making. His jump shooting is still somewhat up and down. It's not, you know, it's not knockdown. It's not something you can really count on. You can't count on him night in and night out. So I think that's been one of the biggest, other than the veteran leadership part of it for this team, I think that bench consistently, you know, and the good teams, that bench sort of has an identity, right? I mean, they you just kind of know what you're going to get from them, and they have an identity. Like, our bench just doesn't really have an identity because, you know, Chris Dunn, Shabazz Muhammad, Cole Aldridge, and Bielitsa just don't have that scoring punch or that defensive lockdown that you need. Tibbs either plays Wiggins or LaVine with that group, which kind of brings us to Tyus Jones, who whenever Tyus has gotten a chance to play, Nate, and you've commented on this before, Tyus has been fantastic. And he was last night. Zach LaVine against Dallas goes out with a hip contusion. And earlier in the season, LaVine went out with in foul trouble, and Tyus came in, and we were down big in that game, and Tyus ended up bringing us back, and the Bulls ended up winning that game.
He's the best
and he
shooter
was fantastic
on the roster
last night.
I think isn't he the best shooter on the roster outside? Because I wanted to ask you this: you were around him every day. He didn't shoot that much of a volume at Duke in high school. I mean, you've known him since high school. He wasn't really have a reputation as a shooter. Had like a really nice floater, but I mean, is he really matured now? Because his jumper looks great.
great to me. I haven't seen it, you know, but he hasn't played enough to know whether that's real. I mean, when you see him just in practice and stuff, is he just knocking shots down?
Well, we don't get to watch practice as much.
Yeah. Or even just, you know, in his warm-ups before the game. No, or, I watch him,
but Tyus is one of those guys, you know, like when you're in his position as a pro player, you know, you're going to work after shoot around. So when the team goes to shoot around a game day, you don't always have practice time. So shoot around becomes your practice. So Tyus is having to do all this extra work. So in order to be able to not play for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or, you know, sporadically, you've got to do all this extra work to be ready for the game. So when your number's called last night against Dallas, Tibbs kind of calls Tyus's number and actually kind of threw a curveball at him because he actually called Brandon Rush first. Zach went out of the game. Zach basically just walked off the court. He was on the court playing and just walked right through the tunnel off the court. Didn't even like tell anybody. He goes, I'm out of here. And so all of a sudden Tibbs goes, well, you know, dead ball situation. Brandon Rush, come on into the game. And then he saw the matchups on the floor. They had 3 point guards on the floor, basically. So he goes, Brandon, go sit down. Tyus, come on. And so he throws Tyus into a game where Minnesota had a 21-point lead that had dwindled down to 6. I think Dallas actually cut it to 4. And so it was the game was still kind of in the balance. And Tyus came in cold and made 3 great plays. You know, Towns got double-teamed on one, threw it out to him. Tyus made a 3. He made a really difficult layup in transition. He made another hoop. He had 7 points. I mean, like, he helped close the game out. The game was kind of over after Tyus's 3. But to go through that, Nate, and to not play, you've got to do a lot of work to be able to get into an NBA game and be ready.
Those are his first non-garbage time minutes in like a month, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he's not played. And so this is my point with Tyus. This is what I always say about him. I've been watching him for a long time. My son, who plays at Northwestern, has kind of is older than Tyus, but the Jones family are good friends of ours, and I've known Tyus and seen him play, you know, whether it's in a high school game or a pickup game. Tyus always wins. He's a winner, and he goes to Duke, and they win the national championship, and he's player of the game in the championship series.
The Nike, you know, like, Hoop Summit, like, he was unbelievable. He won that game for the USA, too.
You know, if you watch him play in high school, one of the most endearing things for me with Tyus is that he's obviously the best player on the floor. If you watch his high school team play, like, he's playing like, you know, you remember the Fat Center and Teen Wolf, you know, like there's like the, you know, the guy that like has no talent whatsoever, the fat guy, like he doesn't literally look like a player. Like there were guys in the court that kind of looked like that on Tyus's team in Apple Valley. Now, you know, obviously they could play the game better, but Tyus was always concerning himself with getting other players on. He was like, he always so willing to pass the ball ahead or to draw the defense in such a way that he could just spoon feed teammates easy baskets. And the way his willingness to share the basketball as the best player on the floor by far was just a really endearing trait for me. So when you see him play as a pro, he doesn't over dribble. Like, he's very efficient. Like, he gets the ball where it needs to go, and then he moves the ball. And if the ball comes to him in a set that's kind of bogging down, he quickly swings it from side to side because he understands that in order to beat a defense, you've got to change sides of the floor. And so he doesn't overthink it. He just makes the smart play all the time. And I think Tibbs is going to be kind of like maybe kind of forced after this last game against Dallas to maybe give Tyus a few more minutes.
You know, it's hard to say. You can play him with some of these other point guards because they need somebody who can shoot. And I really think at this point, he's the best shooter of anybody on this roster who's not LaVine.
I think you could play him with Chris Dunn. I think
exactly,
Chris
yeah.
Dunn together. And then Shabazz at the 3, and then Belly and Cole Aldrich at the 4-5. So he hasn't been willing to do that. Tibbs hasn't been willing to do that as much because he wants to keep either LaVine or Wiggins in the game. One of those two is going to be in the game with that second unit. So,
yeah.
But you never know. I mean, like,
and it's tough
it
because
what
he
you
wants,
have with Tyus.
I mean, they've made a huge investment in Chris Dunn too. You know, I mean, and I think to me, I happen to think that Tyus has actually been better than Dunn this year, and he has been better. And maybe it's a little troubling that, you know, Dunn is older than Tyus, and Tyus has kind of still been better than. But Dunn has these amazing physical tools. I mean, I want to talk about him a little bit. Like, where does he need to improve? I agree with you. He's been fantastic defensively. Like, he made Nick Stauskas's life. Poor Stauskas had to play backup point guard. Like, he made that guy's life miserable in that Philly game. But offensively, other than the jump shot, I mean, which I think we all know is a question mark, is there anything that you've seen in his game and even anything that you can point to as improvement to where you start thinking that he may end up justifying that number 5 pick investment that was made in?
I just think in decision-making in ball screens and being able just to run a team, just like to kind of understand who needs the basketball. It's hard to say with Chris because some of the lineups that he's playing with just aren't offensively explosive. You know what I mean? He doesn't get a chance to play with Towns, Jang, Wiggins, and LaVine very much.
But then if he does, it's tough because like Chris Dunn is a pick and roll point guard, right? He's not an off the ball guy. He's not a spot up shooter. And he has a lot of these games where he has one field goal attempt, two field goal attempts. And I think it seems to me like he's in the mode now where he's just trying not to screw up. And it's tough for him to be the dynamic player he was drafted to be when he's thinking that way.
Yeah, I think that I don't know if he's a pick and roll point guard or not. I mean, like he can play in pick and roll, but part of the problem with Chris at the NBA level is that the decision making that you've got to do with regards to either being able to decide, am I going to pass or am I going to score? What am I going to do? Like, and you got to make those decisions quickly based on how you read the defense. And so I just think that the guys are so much bigger and faster that if whatever you did in college doesn't make a
difference. Right, because he used to just be able. I mean, he was so athletic that he could just overwhelm college bigs and just go into traffic and they'll call a foul on anything in college too when you get to the rim. So he had a huge foul rate, and that Providence team needed him to score. They had they're playing like Ben Bentil at center a lot of times, so he had a pretty spaced floor in college too, so he was able to just careen to the rim and score. And he looked very impressive doing that, but obviously there are a lot of great athletes in the NBA where he's got to develop some new tricks here.
And it's one of the reasons why you can see why coaches, they want these guys to get into the pro game earlier to be able to work on just what you're talking about. I mean, so that, it's not sort of, you're not sitting there, your junior and senior year sort of like still kind of like drilling and doing things that aren't applicable to the NBA game because there's just nothing like getting and drilling against NBA players and those concepts. So, I'm not saying Chris Dunn like wasted a year or two because he obviously wasn't ready to do it then, but
and he had that shoulder
injury. See how he's kind of behind a little. He's a little behind right now in terms of decision making and those split second pick and roll decisions against NBA talent.
I agree with you, and I think that's an interesting point that people are like, oh, he's got to stay in school, he's got to develop, and yeah, you might develop into a better college player if you stay in school, but is that the same as developing into a better pro player? Maybe not.
No, it's not. It's not. I mean. You might be a late bloomer or something, but if you've got NBA physical gifts and talents, I'm not an advocate. Like, I think I like people to stay in for 2 years at least and perhaps even three. I just don't, because I think it's good for the college game. Obviously, if everybody's doing that,
I don't care about the college game. Let's get these guys paid.
I don't like college basketball either, but I don't like college basketball because everybody leaves and like there's no identity anymore. Like, when, like, 20, 30 years ago when like you knew Georgetown Hoyas. You knew Louisville, you knew UCLA, you knew, because these guys were there for a long period of time. But now I look at these mock drafts now, Nate. I don't even know any of these guys. Like, I don't have any visual images games. And
as someone who can't stomach watching a single college game during the season, I would rather just like, let's see these guys in the NBA. They're going to develop better anyway. I'd rather see them playing against real competition. I would rather watch an NBA preseason game. I'd rather watch these guys play in an NBA preseason game and a summer league game than a college game, personally.
I'm with you.
All right, I should probably let you get going here. Thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it. There's always, I had probably 10 things I wanted to discuss, and we got to 5 of them because we got so much to talk about. But don't want to keep you for too much longer here. We always appreciate the time. And do you guys come out here again to Golden State? Am I going to see you again this year?
Yeah, we do. We do come out one more time. I'm trying to see. I know we play towards the end of the season. We come out. Oh, April 4th, Nate.
Oh yeah. All right. I might not be here. I might miss you. I might be at the Hoop Summit then. Go see the next Tyus Jones.
Yeah. Well, that's always exciting. The Hoop Summit is tremendous. We were there in Portland last year when it was going on, and it's a great thing. It's a great thing. Yeah, no, hey, I got a question for you. I did a top five list of old school posters. I put the posters I had on my wall when I, speaking of Nike, the posters I had on my wall, I had the George Gervin Iceman. I had a poster of Dr. J. I had Air Force 1 with Moses and Michael Cooper.
Dude,
and
how,
Michael
old,
Thompson,
how old do you
Bobby
think
Jones.
I am?
Well, I'm just wondering, what poster, did you have a Jordan poster on your wall? Did
oh,
you
yeah. Well, I grew up in Chicago. So
Kobe Bryant?
Yeah, I grew up in Chicago. There are a couple of posters that I had. The one poster was, it was reversible. So one was just like life-sized. It just went on my door. It fit perfectly. My door was like 6'6" tall. So that was how tall Jordan was. And then if you reversed it, it was actually his wingspan, which is a little bit life-size, that you could put horizontally. So I'd alternate between those two. And then the other one was this one from the 91 finals. It was in game 3 where he did one of his signature reverse layups in the overtime after he hit that shot to tie it down the end. And it basically has him like going up on the other side as Vlade Divac is like going up with two hands, basically blocking one side of the rim. So those are the two that I had. I guess I didn't have as much diversity as you, though, it sounds like.
Well, I just think that, you know, just Nike and, you know, the shoe companies back, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, I just thought they did a great job promoting their team. And Adidas, too, for that matter, too, because, you know, you think of just some of the great ad campaigns they had. But Nike just did an unbelievable job. Did you have the Jordan Wings? Was that the classic sort of black and white Jordan Wings poster? Was that the reverse side of that poster?
Because
that's the one
been.
That I think that when I tweeted this out,
the
overwhelming response that the Jordan Wings, the black and white Jordan Wings, the classic. I mean, that was, and then the Mars Blackman too. That ad campaign, the Mars Blackman ad campaign, was pretty popular. People still, adult grown men still have these posters on their wall. By the way, it's not something that sort of is like for kids. But I just have a soft spot in my heart for those kind of pieces of art because it just motivated me to be a player. Having Julius Erving and George Gervin and Daryl Dawkins and these guys on my wall when I was a kid was inspiring to me. So just it was just kind of a fun topic.
Yeah. No. I love those stuff. I mean, putting someone on a poster, like that's a phrase for a reason, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll catch up soon. Thanks again. Always good
okay,
to talk to you both on and off the air. Let's catch up again soon.
Okay, Nate. Thanks.